So, let's talk about the relationship for a moment here. Now, you're a teenage girl.
Yes.
You've just added your new gay friend to your ensemble like an accessory.
Right, like a chihuahua.
Exactly, and with no malice, really. I mean, the girl does not have any malice in her, but she's
completely out of the blue. But okay.
And then all of a sudden she finds out A, that her best friend is this self-styled superhero, and B, that her best friend is not gay. And, you know, he's seen you naked, and he's, and so forth. What is your reaction at that point?
I would probably feel betrayed and kick him out of my house, but that's not what happens.
It sure isn't. I mean, from that point on, it becomes this tale of, like I said earlier, unbridled teenage lust, and that's fine and realistic after a fashion, but the idea of her sort of immediately turning around from this and being okay with him is kind of silly. From what I hear, actually, the graphic novel ends that storyline quite differently. Apparently, she hires her she has her new boyfriend beat the shit out of him and sends him pictures of her blowing the dude. So
that's more realistic to what a teenage girl would do.
Well, I mean, we could just start with the fact that this is not a realistic teenage girl in the first place. I mean, she works at a needle exchange and is happy to get down and dirty in a back alley behind a comic book store.
Yeah.
So it's
it was completely tacked on.
That was just so that
you could say, hey, the main character has something to fight for.
You know, I guess, and it is interesting that it's an interesting difference, actually, because any big franchise film like Spider-Man, they tend to uniformly be, they're family-friendly, that's why they become blockbusters, and as a result, they don't contain significant swearing or nudity, or really any implied sex whatsoever, and for a movie to kind of say, okay, yes, Spider-Man does get to fuck Mary Jane, you know, before the movie's over, then That's at least, it feels more like it's taking place in the real world.
Yeah, I guess that bedroom scene, it felt like they smashed together maybe five scenes that could have taken place together.
Yeah.
And you know, condensed it to like 2 seconds, which was, okay, I'll spread my legs, sure.
Well, also, I mean, the other thing was she goes from styling her hair in the mirror to spraying him in the face. The first time I saw this, I actually thought she just had pepper spray sitting there on the counter.
That's what I thought,
but
too.
It was actually a can of hairspray that she happened to be holding. But,
okay.
But yeah, this girl's clearly made of some tough stuff, between this and other elements. but yeah, the romance was definitely, it had problems. But let's. Sorry, was there anything else you wanted to?
No, I mean, she did a good job for the material she was giving.
Yeah, she was. I had the hardest time placing her until I remembered she is actually the unnamed daughter on How I Met Your Mother in the flash forwards on that show. So.
Oh, Ted.
Okay, so let's talk a little more about Hit Girl. Now, I wanted to expand a little on what I considered unsettling about this character, and I think one of the big things was there are a number of instances in this film where she gleefully murders people. People who are unarmed and completely helpless.
That's pretty much all she does.
Well, no, I would say that's not all she does, because I think most of the people that she's killing are also trying to kill her. But I mean, there's that scene early on in Razul's place where she, where there's the one, the last woman standing, as it were, is the girl in the red dress, and she's clearly terrified, and she smashes a champagne bottle, and she's holding up this broken bottle, but it's clear that all she's trying to do is leave. You know, she doesn't want to try, and she's busted this thing out to defend herself, and Hit Girl, who, I have to say, I love this performance from Chloe Moretz. I think she. She did a fantastic job with this character, but we see her basically revel in murdering this woman, and later on they crush a mobster in a car carrier, and you know we see him explode quite graphically into blood, and then this cube falls out, and she goes, "What a douche!"
Yeah, I mean, to use a D&D term, if I may exemplify my nerdiness, she was chaotic evil. She reveled in murder. She had no like remorse whatsoever on anything that she did. And I mean, there was the one scene, if I may switch a little bit.
Oh, please.
Where Big Daddy's friend, who was a police officer, I can't remember his name.
Marcus, I believe his name was.
Yeah, he's like, "You owe her a childhood." And I'm like, okay, great. We're gonna do something with that. Maybe, maybe Hit Girl kind of longs for that childhood, but she just wants to kill people.
I think the closest that we get to a human moment from Hit Girl, to a moment of a normal child for Hit Girl, is when she comes back to her apartment after Big Daddy gets killed, and we see the two hot chocolates on the table with the marshmallows, and for a split second it looks like I was expecting, Kick-Ass disappears off into the bathroom to clean himself up, because he's all messed up, and we see this moment where she stares at this, and she's like, oh, I'm never going to see my daddy again, and you almost feel, I almost expected her to cry
in that moment,
because that's what a normal person would do.
And you get a sniffle, and so you're like, okay, she's basically a robot.
Yeah, it's, I think actually, this is something I meant to bring up before we got into spoilers, but another thing this movie reminded me of was Watchmen.
Yes, they borrowed a lot from the Watchmen.
Well, I think one thing in particular from Watchmen that this movie pretty effectively conveyed is that in order to be a superhero, you have to be either supremely naive, i.e. Kick-Ass, or you have to be a complete psychopath.
Like Rorschach.
Like Rorschach, but also like Big Daddy, like Hit Girl.
Yeah.
Now, she is a psychopath because she is raised as one, but the fact remains, I think this movie conveyed that point better than Watchmen ever did.
So how would you think Hit Girl would function in normal society? Do you think that, at the end of the movie with her going to school, do you think such a person could actually get a normal life and actually sustain that?
Well, I kind of want to see the end of that scene that we see with her. Her final scene is her getting hit up for lunch money by a couple of cheap shit bullies, and it's a pretty harmless moment. It's a pretty common sort of childhood coming-of-age experience, and I can only assume she beats the living hell out of them.
I would assume she kills them and then goes to the principal's office, and the principal's like, you did a bad thing, Hit Girl.
Yeah, and then we get like a girl with the dragon tattoo situation where she gets committed or something.
Right. But, I don't think a character or a person like that could exist in society normally. They would be locked up because they are a danger to everyone.
Yeah, I almost feel like if she gets taken on by Marcus, who knows what she's been through and knows what her history is with her dad, and I almost feel like the relationship that would have to develop between the two of them would not be too dissimilar from the relationship between her and Big Daddy. But, this is all speculative, so it doesn't really...
Right. This is trying to make the movie more than what it was.
Indeed. I think that's kind of what's at the heart of this discussion, I don't really think this movie is making any kind of grand statement. It definitely has some interesting things to say, but it is definitely pretty trashy at times. Okay, so let's talk about the character of Red Mist. Now, he's played by Christopher Mintz-Plasse, who we know from Superbad primarily, as well as Role Models, and the more I see from this kid, the more I freaking love him as an actor. It seems like both he and Jonah Hill, as Superbad alums, have kind of expanded the variety of roles they can perform from the sort of one role they played in Superbad in a way that Michael Cera has only done maybe once, I would say, in Youth and Revolt. And he definitely impressed me in this film with his performance, but he's also one of the more interesting characters. What was your take on Red Mist?
I actually kind of liked his story arc. It was probably everyone else in the movie, he had the most interesting story arc. He goes from being, the rich kid, to, oh, he's a rich kid under the mobster guy, to now he kind of likes Kick-Ass, and he's a superhero, Red Mist. And I like that he wants to take over his father's business, or at least he wants to be a part of it. But then when he can't, he becomes a part of this popular movement, with Kick-Ass and even Hitler, Hit Girl.
Hitler girl.
Okay.
Anyway,
he had an interesting story arc to him. He actually grew on me as the movie went on. And at the end shot with him,
him wearing basically a hockey mask.
Yeah, and what I took from that was he's the new supervillain.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sort of cliched, like, hey, we're setting this up for a sequel kind of moment at the end was there. But I think they definitely earned it with Red Mist's character, because he definitely, his story parallels Kick-Ass's story in a big way, but he does it with sort of more flair, more just audaciousness.
That car was ridiculous.
Oh, even his mask was ridiculous. He's got flames going up the side of his face. He's got this car that would not seem out of place in a high school parking lot. It's got mist flaring out the sides
of it. Right, right. Kick-Ass is a working class hero.
Exactly.
And Reg Mist is, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth.
Right. But at the same time, he has the same kind of naivety that that Kick-Ass has. And he's malevolent. At one point, we see him shoot a little girl in the chest 3 times, quite unexpectedly, in fact.
But he also saw the tape of her killing all his, all his father's men. So
that's
he,
a good point. He knew
she
was a threat,
dangerous.
Yes.
So he took out the biggest threat first.
Yeah, but for him to go from that in an instant to Kick-Ass, I'm sorry, I didn't know they were going to do this. Is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, it'd be interesting to see what his character would do with more time on screen.
It's also interesting because he is sort of a parallel. He's almost halfway in between Kick-Ass and Hit Girl, because he's also in this situation where he's been raised by his father in a world that's really not a real one. I mean, he's got this huge, like, awesomely voiced bodyguard following him around, telling anybody who walks up to him to fuck off. And I think
we could all use that.
It's true. But he's also in this world where, there's mob. There's just the mafia and criminality all around him, and it's not a normal situation. He's got he's got all these all these trappings. This platter full of criminal muffins on his table every morning, and it's not normal. For them to take that and plus Kick-Ass's naivety, I think was a very interesting character choice, and I think it was one that worked.
Yeah, I like that actor. I'm terrible at names, but I like him in everything he's in. I think he's great in Role Models.
Definitely,
I thought he was the best part of this movie, and I kind of look forward to whatever else he puts out.
While we're talking about the performances, what did you think of Nick Cage?
Nick Cage has always been hit or miss with most people. I've always thought he's great.
Nick Cage is kind of getting into Will Ferrell territory for me, where even when he's in a bad movie, I kind of still love him.
Yeah, I mean, he can do no wrong, really. I mean, yeah, exactly like Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell can be in the stupidest movies, but you're like...
And he will still make me laugh.
And you'll still enjoy it because it's Will Ferrell. I mean, Nick Cage has that quality to him.
The aesthetic of his costume was very interesting, and the physicality... I have no idea if he was performing the stunts in that scene where he just comes in and kills everybody in the warehouse, which was an awesome and brilliantly edited scene, I have to say. But just the physicality of that character, but also like the fact that he straps a little mustache on going down the sides, like connecting up with the goatee, and that he shows up in Kick-Ass's bedroom and talks to him like William Shatner, which we talked about earlier.
Yeah, anytime anyone pulls from William Shatner, it's usually a good thing.
It's true. Oh, we have not talked about the end sequence at all. The end sequence with the mobsters. And the freaking jetpack.
Yeah, that I was kind of hoping that to save the movie in my eyes that the jetpack was really a T-Rex with chain guns, because that would be pretty awesome. And Kick-Ass is riding this robotic T-Rex, but no, it's a jetpack and it's lame and it's pretty much every, I was kind of dreading that that's what it would be, but the fight with the mobsters was pretty stupid. I mean, they weren't gonna live. None of them were gonna stand a chance. Why don't we just fast forward and get to the final boss where he'll be killed anyway.
Well, it's interesting. I was not bored at all during that action sequence. I think it was extremely well choreographed. I think it was well shot. I think it had the sense of place that that so many action sequences are lacking these days. Where you look at something like Transformers 2, you don't know what the hell is going on. You don't know where anything is in relation to anything else. And I think watching this sequence in Kick-Ass, which obviously doesn't involve giant robots, but it does involve a series of hallways and different rooms and different things are happening, and I think there were parts of it that were innovative as well. I mean, as well as being able to keep track of the sense of space, there were also these sort of two final boss fights, between Kick-Ass and Red Mist, and between Hit Girl and Frank D'Amico. What did you think of those two fights?
I like the double KO in Reg Mist Kick-Ass fight, just because...
This is where they punch each other and they both get knocked out.
Yeah, it was basically, okay, take the two inept superheroes and have them fight in a dojo.
Exactly.
Okay. The fight between D'Amico and Hit Girl was just silly, I thought, because you know, at this point, she should just kill him with no problem. What makes his roundhouse kick so effective?
Well, I think what makes his roundhouse kick so effective, which I think is evident in that scene, is that he is a fully grown man and she is a little girl. But and that's all there is to it. I mean, her style up until this point has been, I'm going to flip around the room and you can't catch me, you can't hit me. Because if you do hit me, it's going to hurt. Because I'm a little girl. And I mean, she we've seen her with bladed weapons and things like that. But we see her punching D'Amico in the face a couple times. And she doesn't really do any damage, obviously, because she punches like a little girl.
Well,
so.
he has a lot of hit points.
Well, there's that. But, I found it to be kind of a brave choice for both the filmmakers and for Mark Strong, because I mean, who plays Frank D'Amico? Because this will forever be the scene in which he kicks a little girl in the face repeatedly.
Well, how that scene should end for me was he kills her, and then somehow Kick-Ass destroys the building and kills him
with Chekhov's bazooka.
Yeah, exactly.
The bazooka in the first act.
Exactly. I mean, either everyone dies or everyone lives. That's how that movie should end. And from that opening scene with, you know, if you try to become a superhero, you're gonna die. I think that would be a nice little callback if the heroes did actually die at the end, that it was all for naught.
Well, I think that should bring us to the end of our discussion. I'd like to acknowledge the Slash Filmcast, from whom I have shamelessly stolen the format of our review.
All of it.
No, not the review itself. Just the format of the review, not the content.
The exact same review.
I'm literally reading it off their site right now. No, it's I owe hours of entertainment and insightful film criticism to those guys, and they absolutely are the reason that I do this. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the as-yet-unnamed filmwonk.net audio review series, which may or may not become a podcast. And thank you, and good night.
Bye-bye.